On the phone now, though, is Alan Mundy. Hi, Alan.
Hey, how are you doing, Steve?
Good, man. Thanks so much for calling in.
No problem at all. I love doing it.
I have played in the first hour. I played about six cuts of what I would call a nice smattering of Alan Mundy music. And I've gone back to the Country Gazette days. They heard some real scratchy vinyl because I only have Out to Lunch and Traitor in Our Midst on vinyl, and they got to hear all my scratches from over the years, and they heard some of the stuff from the new thing, Dapple Patty, is that what it's called?
Yes.
Yeah. And and then with Joe Carr, I love that thing with all the Texas tunes. I probably play one of those cuts every other week, if not every week. And so they've heard a nice dose, and also from Banjo Sandwich. So by now, the people that have been listening, they understand what Alan Mundy is about, maybe. I don't know. Would anybody ever know that, though, really?
Oh, I don't think it's that deep and hard to get together on,
And then I played some Jimmy Martin, but, I don't have anything that I recognize with you in the band as Jimmy Martin, and that's just my failings to be able to pull something together. But since you've been so nice to call in, and now everybody knows what a wonderful musician and your place in history is, and the fact that I credit you, Alan, by the way, and I'll just get this out of front, I credit you with my law career.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I'm innocent.
You're innocent.
Please.
I know. Well,
I've been framed.
Well, I was listening to the Country Gazette, and I was listening to Poor Richard's Almanac. When Banjo Sandwich came out, I thought, all right, I'm just going to law school because I can't do this.
I should have done the same thing, except it wouldn't have been law school. It would have been something else.
Well, Banjo Sandwich hit me right between the eyes and between college and law school, and I thought, if I work like a year, I can play one of these tunes, but... And by then, Alan will have played them differently. So it's time for me to move on and just put my banjo aside and have fun with it, which is what I do.
Yeah. Well, you probably made the right choice. Since you mentioned that Joe Carr material, we got a call, and Joe got the same call that I did, that they're doing a 60 Minutes. One of these Sundays is doing a... special on a place called Marfa, Texas, which is way west Texas, out near Big Bend National Park. And Marfa is a big arts community, has grown up out there, and they're doing a piece on Marfa, Texas, and they've chosen one of the songs they're going to use anyway is Joe's composition and our recording of a tune called Welcome to West Texas.
Yeah.
So we're going to be featured on, I think the guy told me, 25 seconds. Of the 60 minutes, we're 25 seconds.
So. And the banjo will be what part of that 25 seconds?
Well, let's not parse this too much.
Since I know you get paid by the note, so I'm just trying to help you out.
Right. Well, I don't know. I'd have to hear what they chose to do. But anyway, so that's kind of a cool little
thing. That is a cool
thing.
And
music is a lot like that. You record something, and 30 years later, it shows up.
Do you? I have to ask you this since I have you online. Do you stay in contact with Slim Ritchie?
Oh gosh, yeah. In fact, I live in a little place called Wimberley, Texas, which is between Austin and San Antonio, and Slim lives just probably 7 or 8 miles from me. So I went to see him play last night.
Did you?
At a little place here in Wimberley. So he's doing great. He's Slim's probably 70.
Oh.
Four or five by now, and still plays guitar, has a group called the Jitterbug Vipers.
I love that name. He posts these pictures, and I'm thinking, Slim's having a good time, because I think it's Slim, and every time I look around the picture, it's three women.
Well, there's a guy in there with a big white beard, and that's Slim. He's definitely there. And you're right, he's having a great time.
And he's always been into the it's back, and I think back to the Ridge Runner days, I guess, is why I remember, and some of those things you were putting out with all those guys back out in that part of the country were on Ridge Runner, as was Banjo Sandwich.
Right. Yeah. Well, Slim and I go. This is could take way too long, but when
I don't time things. I just talk till we're done. So take your time.
Okay. When I was 14, I'm from Norman, Oklahoma, and when I was 14 years old and wanted to learn to play the guitar, I looked in the phone book, and there were two music stores that I recognized looking in the Yellow Pages that were that I could walk to. One of them was Carl and Bob's Music, and then the other one was Mike Ritchie's Guitar Center. So I walked down, and it was the closest, so I walked 5 or 6 blocks down to where it was, and it was a very small part of a duplex, and in there was this character named Mike Ritchie and his wife, and they had a music store in their duplex. So you'd walk in, and there'd be a right in the front room, and this is very tiny, would be a case, you know, with equipment in it and guitars hanging on the walls. And you go in the kitchen, and there's a pick rack up on the stove, and, you know, and that was Mike, who is now Slim Ritchie. So I've known him since I was 14 years old.
Wow.
So, and he's a wonderful, what he is by passion, I guess, is a jazz guitarist.
Right, he's...
But he loves all kinds of music and got into acoustic music and bluegrass and on different levels and asked me, and I think it was 1975 I recorded, he wanted to start a record label. And so we did Banjo Sandwich, and I did 3 or 4 for him, and Country Gazette did a couple albums for him, and Marty Stewart and Paul Black and many, many others. And he did some blues guys, too, and from around Fort Worth, which is where he was at the time. But anyway, just that he and I go back a long, long way. And I bought my first banjo, very first banjo I ever bought, I bought from him through his store. And it was a little Vega. It was the cheapest banjo that Vega made. And it's called a Vega Ranger. And I have a model of that to this day. In fact, it's out right over there. I can see it from where I'm sitting. I use it to kind of just plunk around on. So, anyway, that's Slim, and that's Slim Ritchie.
Well, when we're talking about Slim and the old Ridge Runner things, which I hate to say, Alan, they're old. Every time I say that, I sink a little bit because to me they're still new. But let's just get it out on the table. The Ridge Runner stuff that you did, that I bought, that sent me to law school, man, it's just got some age on it back in the '70s. But still great music.
Yeah. No, it was like I say, the first for him, the first release was in 1975, which was Banjo Sandwich. Yep. So that was me. And also, you mentioned about the Jimmy Martin recordings, and I don't know all the titles, but I recorded several, I think as many as 12 titles with him. I don't know which, I can't say any of them were his popular stuff, it was among the last of the Decca MCA period.
Okay.
And, he did a gospel album that came out called Singing All Day and Dinner on the Ground, and I'm on about 4 or 5 or 6 of the gospel tunes on that, and then I did more secular stuff with, what was the name of that song, Chattanooga Dog, and I'd Like to Be 16 Again and Know What I Know Now, and Midnight Rambler, Between Fire and Water, and some others.
You're reading that off the back of the album, aren't you?
I am not. I'm just trying to...
Still got the mind. You still got the mind.
I'm trying to read it off of the back of my eyeballs.
You know what? When we're talking about the Ridge Runner things, which to me, I just... I waited and waited and waited, and I had the Jazzgrass thing, which is just a whole nother topic with Slim, and I think maybe fit in, but those things are now on CD, and actually, where can the nice folks out there, if they want to hear what the heck we're talking about at some of those Ridge Runner recordings, where might they find those?
Well, both Banjo Sandwich and Jazzgrass are available through me, if you want to do that. Can I mention that?
I'm trying to get you there, man.
Oh, okay. It's called Al Mundy's Banjo College. And then you have to put .com on the end, or it doesn't work. So it's AlMundysBanjoCollege.com.
All right, there you go. And I got my CD version, and it's actually buried somewhere here in my hard drive. I just didn't have time to play everything that I wanted to play. But that was a that to, you know, actually back in those days when that came out, There was a little jazz station in Cincinnati used to float down on the riverbank called WNOP, and it's long since gone. But I took a copy of the vinyl down to them, knocked on the door, and said, you guys might want to give this a spin. And they actually played a couple cuts from Jazzgrass, and it was a straight-ahead jazz station. And
well, that's real cool. And, you know, that's all Slim's idea in the sense that, you know, Slim went to a lot of bluegrass festivals and hung out because he had a business, you know. He also had a business, and this is Slim, everything has a humorous bent to it, or many things do, I should say. But he had a record-selling mail-order business called Sell Dim Records. And he had a trailer and pulled it around to bluegrass festivals and whatnot. And he would go out and pick in the evenings with all the pickers, and he just noticed that a lot of them were interested in sort of, I'll say, beyond bluegrass sorts of stuff. So he would play tunes with them and just decided to record an album of it. And he used, you know, Ricky Skaggs and Sam Bush and myself and in some area, Fort Worth at the time, area jazzers, and he got me to play banjo. Bill Keith is on a tune.
That's right, he is, yep.
And Gerald Jones is another banjo player that was on that. But and Joe Carr played mandolin.
That's right.
As did Ricky Skaggs. I know Ricky played fiddle on a tune or two, I think. But anyway, and Richard Green was on one, so, you know, he just sort of pulled all that together and made that album and had a great time doing it and enjoyed, you know, being with the bluegrassers and talking about the music and helping them find their way through it. Certainly he helped me get my way through it and with varying degrees of success.
Now, as far as I can tell, Alan, I mean to cut you off. If I could see you, it'd be easier. And if I talk too much, let me know. But as far as I can tell, the Poor Richard's Almanac thing has never made it to a CD release. Correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
And I have that album, but it's too. I can't get that down to a CD version.
Well, what you know, that recording was made on a home, whatever was available in 19. Let me think about it. I think it was 69, in early 1969, and on a home, maybe, not a wall and sack, but not far removed from that, on just, you know, quarter-inch home recording tape, and Wayne Stewart was the, if there was a recording engineer, he was the recording engineer, and we picked, and it came out originally on American Heritage, which was a label up in Montana that put out mostly fiddle players. And then later Slim put it out with some extra cuts on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the dynamic range of the recording was so tiny and it hardly, you know, if you were to cut it, I have this image that if you were to cut it direct to vinyl, that it wouldn't be strong enough to cut a groove. You know, the signal was so weak. So I'm not surprised it doesn't.
I've tried it, and for some, you know, and the Country Gazette stuff that I played in the early part of the show are vinyl that I have, but, you know, you can put them on CD with a certain...
Sure.
I cannot do it with... And I have the original Poor Richard's Almanac, and I cannot get it. It just won't work. It's not going to happen. I don't know why. You know, maybe if I had a studio, but from what I've got, I can't get it reduced to something that I can then... You know,
right.
The show.
Well, I'm not surprised.
Well, you know.
But the tapes, you know, have long turned to dust. And,
oh, there's a song right there.
Yeah.
The tapes have long turned to dust.
Right. So it's got to be. You know, maybe when we're off the air or what, I'll get your address. I took it to a studio and had it, you know, made to a CD.
Okay.
So I could. Get you one on a personal
level. Oh, man, I would love that. I would love it. Oh. And if it'd be okay, I'd stick it in and play something on the show next
sure,
time.
Sure. Okay. I mean, that's what it was made for. Yeah, it was to be heard.
Cool.
And it's a real interesting sort of artifact. You know, Sam was probably, I'll say, 16 at the time, and I would...
Oops. Welcome to Verizon Wireless.
Hello.
Customer
Hello, you there? Oh, man. Somewhere we lost Alan. Let's try this. I'm going to call him right back. Hold on. Don't go anywhere. There he is.
I hear a phone ringing. Is that?
I'm trying to call you back. I lost you for a second. For some reason, Verizon Wireless decided they wanted to jump in on the phone call.
All righty.
But well, they're gone. They're gone now. They're gone.
All righty. Anyway, I was talking about Poor Richard's Almanac, and Wayne and Sam and I made that in 69, and we were going to be a group called Poor Richard's Almanac. But this is 69, and I just gotten out of college, and I got out in January and got my draft notice in April, I guess, so they didn't give me much time. So I had to leave and went back to Norman, and which is a whole other story. Wayne and Sam went on and got Courtney Johnson to play with them, so they had a Poor Richard's Almanac with Courtney for a while.
Oh, okay.
And then they moved on to, what was that group called? Bluegrass Alliance.
Yeah.
And on into Newgrass Revival. But
right.
When we were making this CD, we made a small tape and sent it around to some labels, at the time, which was Rural Rhythms and maybe County Records is all that were. And I remember the letter we got back from Rural Rhythms. And if you never knew the guy, he's kind of a character. Uncle Jim O'Neill was the guy that had County Records at the time. And he wrote us a letter back that basically said, how dare you plagiarize some, other people. There's no way you can be this good. it was just this, it was a real funny
That's strange.
Letter for us to get back. This can't be you. This can't be these youngsters playing this. So that was kind of a funny.
Do you still have that letter?
No, I never. But Uncle Jim O'Neill is gone now, and Rural Rhythms is passed on to which was a real interesting, because years later when I went to L.A. I got to meet him, and he was just as sort of a, I won't say a goofy character, but certainly a character for sure. And Sam, I think his name is Passamano, who worked for him out in L.A., and eventually wound up with the label and the label name, and is doing really great stuff now. But back then, it was a pretty funky deal. But anyway, so that was his response. I don't know if we ever got one from County Records.
Okay.
Well,
the other thing that, there's just a lot to cover, but the banjo sandwich, the Stelling banjo, as I recall, and I remember trying to find...
The first place you go out to in Nashville at that time, anyway, was a place called Bobby Green's Dusty Roads Tavern. And it was a place where the bluegrassers and other pickers would go hang out. And it was a real divey, kind of awkwardly shaped bar there in Nashville, but it's long before the Station Inn but it was before the Station Inn, and pickers would go down there and hang out. Kenny Baker would go in there fairly regularly, and I became good friends with Kenny there. But a family, or this couple, would come down, and they were a rather joyous couple, so I'd go sit with them and hang out. Well, it was Jeff Stelling and his wife. And Jeff was in the Navy, going to Vanderbilt. They were sending him to school there. And his degree is actually in math or engineering or something to that effect. And hung out with him and for the 2 years that I was there in Nashville. And he and I became very, very good friends. And when I went out to California, he called me up. I was in L.A., and he was stationed in San Diego. So I went down there and visited him a time or two, and then while he was still there, he came up to L.A. and said, I've started building banjos. Would you be interested in trying one out? And I did, and I liked the sound of it immediately, and have been playing Stellings ever since. So that would be probably 1974, 75, and that Stelling you hear on that banjo sandwich was the very first one that I had. It wasn't the first one he had built. but it was the first one I had.
And every once in a while, first of all, let's say hi to Katie Daly in case Katie's out there somewhere.
Yes, for sure, because we were talking about her before we went on.
Yeah.
And I met her, you know, probably in 72 or 73 at the Child Herald. Her partners, too, one or the other was the first place we met, but have been fast friends ever since.
Yeah.
You know, she got into the radio end of the music there not long after that, and every time I'd be in the D.C. area or the band, we'd visit her on her radio show and hang out with her at her house, and just very, very good friends, best.
Oh, yeah, good. Well, I wanted to make sure we said that because she said she might tune in to hear her buddy Al, and I thought, Katie, there you go. Need a shout-out, but she's there. I enjoyed meeting her on the phone a couple weeks ago for the first time. The Styling right. Banjo, by the way, just for anyone who's tuned in, we're talking to Alan Monday. This is Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass on Worldwide Bluegrass, and what we're talking about, if you just tuned in, the Styling Banjo and the part that it played and the part that Alan played in the advent of that instrument, and I think a change in the sound. I mean, how would you describe a Stelling sound if you had to label it?
Well, for me, you know, and as I say these things, I've never really owned a really fine Gibson banjo. Every banjo I had prior to having the Stelling was a put-together from this, a neck from here, and a resonator from here, and a tone ring from another spot, and you know, they're just, for me, I didn't have access to what would be nowadays would be an obviously really fine banjo. Although I like to tell this, when I was with Jimmy Martin, there was a banjo player and a collector and possibly a dealer from I believe Asheville, North Carolina, named Tom McKinney. And Tom came to Nashville and visited Jimmy. And with him, he had some instruments he was selling. And one of them is that banjo that Sonny Osborne has.
Oh.
And I sat there with it and played on it and certainly loved it, and it was a great instrument. But at the time, you know, the money he was asking for it at that time would just be incredibly laughable now. I mean, because it was so, in comparison now, it was so cheap. But for 1969 or 70, whenever that was, it could have been, you know, much cheaper, and I still couldn't have afforded it, you know, working with Jimmy Martin.
Yeah.
Whatnot. I always loved Roy Clark, and I'm sure this saying comes from some other era, but Roy Clark on Hee Haw or something once said, if steamboats were a dime, all I could do is run along the shore and holler, ain't that cheap? You know, and that's kind of the way it was. You know, all I could do is stand back and say, ain't that, you know, that banjo, ain't that cheap?
Well, boy, it ain't cheap now, though, as you know.
No. But anyway, my experience with really fine banjos that I could sit and play and perform with over a period of time was not great. But I had some nice sounding instruments. I mean, I recorded with Jimmy and Country Gazette with whatever I had, so I made it that far. But for me, it was always difficult. You know, I'm not a real banjo technical setup kind of guy, so I never could quite get them to where they seemed responsive as I would want them to be. Well, the Stelling was immediately that way. You know, it was, I played it, and you didn't have to play it, for me anyway, as forcefully as I seemed to be playing on those Gibsons to get the sound out. So I could play more, I'm going to use the word finesse or delicately sounding sorts of things. Yeah. On the Stelling that I didn't seem to be able to do on the other instruments.
Okay.
So, you know, and he was the first, I mean, Ohm Banjos was certainly around, and Vega was still making, the original Vega company was still around making banjos. But Gibson was about it, and then the first real viable alternative for me was the spelling. And I think a lot of people have found that to be the case, you know, that spelling was the beginning of a sort of a banjo, I won't even say renaissance, but a explosion of banjo builders. And I think, you know, contemporary banjo builders, and Jeff Stelling was among the first, along with the gentleman that owned banjos.
Chuck Augsbury.
Chuck, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's the name that I was aware of, anyway.
Do you think the Stelling, okay, all those things make perfect sense to me, but was it just what I heard your style playing, or was it also, and I overuse this term, was it brighter sounding? Was that just a result of you playing what you were playing on it?
No, I think his instruments do sound brighter. Although I will go to say this too, is that I think one of the unique things about the Stelling is that it's more than some of the others, for me anyway, it has a huge variety of sounds that can be gotten out of it, determined by the setup of the instrument, you know, what kind of strings, head tension, bridge, tailpiece tension, string action, you know, just all the normal stuff, but it seems like it was a broader range of sounds available from that. And early on, it was certainly considered a brighter sound than the Gibson banjos. And in that way, it was easier to hear as a performer, just having it, you know, strapped onto you and standing up and playing. It was easier for me to hear just physically without having to wait for the monitors or the house sound to deliver what you were doing. Yeah. You could kind of, there was an element of the live sound.
When I introduced in the beginning of the show, which was about 2 o'clock, I hear these things in what you play. I still hear that, and I know you're from Oklahoma, but I still hear that. It's kind of, and I don't know how to describe the bounce, but I also know that you were big in the fiddle tunes. But when I hear your playing and I try to reproduce it myself, which is not possible, there's an extra bounce. There's something in there that you do, and I don't know if it's intentional or is it just for effect or is it just your signature into a particular lick. But there's kind of, am I off on that? Can you describe it as a bounce or something that you add?
Well, you know, I've had enough people tell me that I'll go along with it. But, you know, it's not anything that I consciously say I'm going to play this. I can kind of replicate it and then turn it off. I'm going to play this in a bouncy way, and then this other thing I'm not going to. It's just when I play, that's the way it comes out.
Yeah.
And I think every player has their, you know, all the sort of personality players, I guess. You know, you can hear Sonny Osborne play, and you know it's Sonny Osborne, mm-hmm. or you hear J.D. Crowe play, and you can tell it's J.D., or Bill Emerson, or, you know, certainly Don Reno and Earl Scruggs and Ralph Stanley. And those players, they all have their real identifiable sound. And I guess whatever you're describing is what my sound is, or my style, or my...
Well, I mean, that's one
sensibility is.
That's one small part of it, but there's a slight little hesitation before a note every once in a while, and as soon as I hear that, I know that's your playing.
Right. It's and you don't identify it as a mistake.
No.
So
that would be good. Alan Munday, the man who innovated mistakes on banjo. That would be
right. Right. I won't say mistakes into gold. I won't say I've turned anything into gold. But I don't know. It's just a sensibility, I guess, I have in my playing, and I'm not really sure how it's produced. Although I guess I don't even know if I could turn it off. You know, totally.
Well, I mean, it's really, you've kind of hit it. It's really, it's a personal taste thing, and which
I
also.
I think so.
Just a little emphasis.
Think, you know, it says everybody that plays, you know, if you think about it and spend a lot of time doing it, you infuse your own personality into it in many, many different ways, and that's one of the ways that it comes out. So, you know, I took, there's a really, when I lived, I taught at South Plains College and lived in Leveland, over in Lubbock. Oddly enough, there's a world-class classical guitarist, and named David Brandon, and he tours. He's the head of the guitar program now at Texas Tech, but he toured with Christopher Parkening, who's, you know, just one of the...
He's big time.
Big time, big time.
Yeah, yeah.
And David was his... When he would travel and play guitar duets, David was the guy, you know, and he's a really, really nice man, and I thought, well, here's this guy in Lubbock, and he at the time, he just had a guitar studio, so I went over and took some guitar lessons from him, and there was a piece that was, you know, not unlike sort of this Don Reno role on the banjo, but it was on the guitar, so I play it. I'm not a guitar player, but I just thought I should take advantage of this guy. So I went over there and played it. He says, you know, you're playing all these dotted notes. You should be playing it straight. And so he showed me, and I went, oh, yeah, I hear it. Hmm. So in a sense, I understand when people say that, because that's what I did to that piece. Is I sort of, I won't use the word jazz, but jazzed up the timing a little bit by, you know, playing all of these dotted notes rather than playing it straight. And when he played it straight for me, I heard it immediately. You know, I get it.
Is there a Texas swing influence, you think, in what you're playing, or is that?
It very well could be, yeah. There's sort of a little, yeah, it is. For sure, you know, especially on sort of the medium tempoed songs that the swing players would play. And, you know, early on when I was in Norman as a kid playing the banjo, and by the time I was in college, you know, I tried to gig around some as much as I could, which was not much because there was not any real bluegrass scene that I could just plug into. There were players that I could hang out with, Byron Berline for one.
Oh, yeah.
But after Byron left school, I was on my own, and there was a restaurant in town that was run by a guy that came from a musical family there in central Oklahoma that had Western swing bands.
Mm.
The family name was Salathiel, which is Greek. And he had been in New York City in the 40s and knew you know, Jimmy Rainey and Barney Kessel and Tal Farrow and all these jazz guitarists up there. But he ran this barbecue restaurant in Norman and had music and hired me, oddly enough, to come play banjo. So, and then he'd have a country guy singing Six Pack to Go and whatever the country songs were at the time. And I was a guitar player, played electric guitar, sang country songs, and me on the banjo. Hmm. And they absolutely had no, they didn't think it was odd. You know, they just thought that, well, that's me, you're a musician, he's a musician, play music. And so I played with whoever Doyle Salathiel hired that night to play. And so, you know, we did a lot of odd stuff. And I guess all that being involved with other types of music like that, sort of, I picked up on certain things, and that's what comes out in your music.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a dang deal, isn't it?
It's a dang deal. Country, take a second. I don't want to keep you all day, but Country Gazette, such a great history there, and the guys that came in that band, and I don't even know how many albums you did. I don't need you to tell me, but just tell the people that are listening to Alan Mundy here a little bit about Country Gazette, how that came together.
All righty. Well, as I mentioned, when I was in college, I went to school with Byron Berline, a great, great fiddle player. If they're not familiar with him, which they should be.
They should be.
And he's 2 years older than I am, so I'm 66, he's 68, and I've seen with some regularity out and about different places, and he's still plays as great as ever. He's one of the most powerful, strongest fiddle players that I've ever played with. And so he and I went to school together and were buddies and did a lot of things we shouldn't have done, but we did them. Guilty. Judge did it. And he went away and worked with Bill Monroe and then got drafted into the Army. And then when he got out of the Army, he went to California. And I went to Nashville and worked with Jimmy Martin for 2 years. He went out to California and worked with Doug Dillard and did a lot of studio work in L.A. there. And I wrote him a letter. This is, you know, it's real funny to think back in the day.
You actually had to write a letter?
Cell phones and internet and everything. But I sit down and wrote a letter.
Did you use a quill pen?
No, I didn't. It wasn't quite that old. It may have been in the age of ballpoints.
All right.
So I might have got a knife out and sharpened my pencil. Anyway, so I wrote him a letter and said, I'm going to leave Jimmy come to California. If there's anything going on, let me know. So I wrote to him, and he wrote back and said, yeah, I'm getting this group together called Country Gazette, Roger Bush and I. Roger Bush was a bass player who had played for many years with Roland and Clarence White and the Kentucky Colonels. And he was, Roger and Byron were playing in Doug Dillard's group called Doug Dillard and the Expedition. And they were going to leave that and start their own group. Would I be interested in being the banjo player? And so I said, yes, I'll be there. So in 1972, I left Nashville and went to California and joined Byron and Roger Bush, and Kenny Wirtz was the guitar player, mm-hmm. singer. And that was Country Gazette in 72, and we recorded two albums like that, Traitor in Our Midst and Don't Give Up Your Day Job, were mm-hmm. our first two albums. And a lot of people, or not a lot, but a number of people remember the first album because it had this comic book
yes.
cover on it.
Yes, it does.
You know, and, Missy Raines tells the story of, as a youth buying that CD and being afraid to take it home.
It was scandalous, Alan. I still have it. I have it.
Yeah, because their parents wouldn't be happy about it, I think. But anyway.
It was all sorts of debauchery, folks. If you don't know what he's talking about, you might want to shield your eyes if anyone says, here's Traitor in the Midst, because it'll just it'll corrupt you right to the core.
Right, right. Anyway, so I had a great time being in L.A. and, you know, loved it out there. And I loved the music I made with Byron and Roger and Kenny. And Kenny left, and Roland White came into the group. And he and I were together for 15 years or more, playing Country Gazette in different configurations and whatnot. We recorded eventually for Flying Fish and Ridge Runner.
Yep.
So we had a good run at it and went all the way up to, you know, for me anyway, up to now, I guess. I have a group that I play with from time to time called the Alan Mundy Gazette.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of drag that name forward a
little
bit. Well,
and in the first half hour I played, because I told him, listen to this, and Alan's playing. There's what I describe as a bounce. We've talked about that. I've talked about what I hear in my head, rightly or wrongly, sort of a Texas swing kind of a thing. And then this Texas influence anyway, or West, because I know you're from Oklahoma. And I also said, listen to his humor. So in the first set, I played from the Alan Mundy Gazette, the traditional family breakdown, which I just...
Right.
With the title alone, I mean...
I know, well, it's hard, you know, it just, the sense of humor has always been important to me, and there's no reason it shouldn't be in the music and in the presentation of it, so, and, you know, being with Joe Carr for many years, Joe was quite a clever guy and quite a cut-up, and we had a good time, so humor has always been a part of my, not only the playing, but the presentation of the music and whatnot, and it's so there.
They also heard, and by the way, because if it weren't for humor, you would just have all those piles of cash.
Yes.
I stunned you, didn't I?
Yeah.
And, you know, that would just be a heartless existence with all the gold that you make from playing bluegrass. Without humor, where would you be?
Yeah, well, you know, one of Joe Carr used to, when we'd play, he would always challenge the other musicians to do what we did, which was to be in bluegrass, you really have to take a vow of poverty. And we challenged all those bands that were rode into festivals on buses and everything to join us in this bluegrass way. Vow of poverty.
How long did you teach out at the college? And you were out there for a long time.
Yeah, I was there for 20, 21 years.
Yeah.
Had a good time. It was great, you know, and really enjoyed it and had a lot of great musicians and people come through the program. And Jeremy Garrett with
String Dusters.
String Dusters. Mm-hmm. He was a student there and loved Jeremy. You know, before I got there, Ron Block and Mike Bubb and Stuart Duncan were students there, and trying to think of some others. Slips my mind right now.
That's good. In the opening half hour, I also played the Coyote Hanging on a Barbed Wire Fence.
Barbed Wire Fence, yeah.
that one makes me cry.
It's a sad song, isn't it?
It's very sad for the coyote.
You know, and for me, it's real important connections for me in music and in my life are real, real important. And Adam Granger, who that was done with, Adam and I have known each other. Adam is from Norman, and we've known each other since kids, you know, youth. And the guy that wrote that song, John Hadley, is from Norman or lives in Norman and has for many, many years. So, you know, for me, connections in music are real important, and in life, you know, just keep, when you make friends, keep them.
Yeah, I think that's good advice.
What I say.
Sounds like good advice to me. Hey, Alan, can we do this again sometime? I know it's only taken 6 months to actually, for both of us to think about it at the same time, but can I bring you back on sometime in the future?
Sure. I didn't mean to take up.
No, you're not. I'm just thinking that I like to do this again. You're not, as I say, I don't time things. It's just that as we're getting to where I think I ought to let you go back and do whatever you do out there and way out in Texas. I just want to make sure that we can do this again. And if I send you an address, and when I see you again, I'll be happy to pay you for the CD version of Poor Richard's Almanac.
Oh, sure. I'll send me an address, and I'll get you one.
Hey, is the Alan Monday Gazette? Are you do you have a schedule or anything? Are you out doing or performing as a band?
Well, we don't do a lot because just the way of the music business nowadays. You know, this is another interesting thing. Back, you know, when Country Gazette started, or just prior to that, to me, music business was when you're in a band, you're in a band. And everything you do is about the band and for the band. And if you play gigs, it's with the band. And if you try to get gigs, it's with the band. And nowadays, you know, it's like what day of the week is it determines what band you're in. And it's just a fact. Musicians want to make a living, so they have to do everything they can.
See?
So they work with whoever it is that has the job.
You know why they think like that? They didn't sign that vow of poverty.
There you go. This is another consequence of that. how terrible. They want to feed their family and have
What's
insurance.
Wrong with these people? What's wrong with these
What
people?
Is wrong with America? Anyway, so nowadays, if you have a band, you got to call up and make sure everybody's available on a certain day. So we're not doing that much.
Okay.
But we are playing in late summer. We're doing a tour where we're going to Las Cruces, New Mexico, and then Phoenix or Tucson, and then on up to a festival at Mammoth Lake, California.
Okay.
We'll be out there, and I don't remember the date.
Is there a page that people can go to and find that information, or this kind of?
God, I don't know.
All right, good enough.
I think.
I don't want to push it.
Eventually, yeah, you could go to AlanMondayGazette.com, I guess it might be.
Okay.
I have a web page. Hey, I'm very modern.
Yeah, I know. Oh, great. This has been a blast, Alan. I appreciate Alan Mundy calling in, and I want to do it again. There's more stuff I want to talk about, and I'm not booting you off, but I just want to make sure.
Need to move on.
I want to talk again. That's all. If we leave them hanging, see, if we don't tell them everything right now, they'll come back another time.
That's the best part of showbiz. Leave them wanting more.
That's right. Yeah. All right. Thanks so much, man, for calling in.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right. Talk to you later, man.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
There's one of my favorites, Alan Mundy. Good guy. There's a quality human being, folks.